Hello, Place to Be Nation listeners. Dylan Hill's back again with yet another WrestleMania weekend independent show pod blast. This time we're going to be looking at Beyond Wrestling, lit up event, an all intergender show, a late starting show, and I'm a madman because it is 3:55 as I pressed record here to talk to you a little bit about this card tonight that took place. Another show that was streamed on Fight. All the shows that I've covered so far have been streamed on Fight. I don't know how many more shows I'm going to cover. Really depends on my schedule and what I decide to do over the next couple of days. But first day of streaming on Fight, I think, was pretty successful. Were there some hiccups? Yes, there were. But by and large, stream quality was pretty good. And here with this event, you've got a show that was starting on the East Coast here. It started a few minutes late, so it started a little bit after 1 a.m. and it ran until about 3:50. So it was the longest show of the day, but still not really a long show. Unfortunately, I do think if you were to make a criticism of this show, it would be that there was decidedly too much for the time slot they were in. When you had the Matt Riddle's Bloodsport event, which went under 2 hours, even with a 25-minute intermission, or 20 or 25-minute intermission, and the Evolve show, I think, was a little bit under 2.5 hours, to go 2 hours and 45 minutes or whatever when you're that late. That probably was not the smartest thing. On the other hand, this show did have some challenges that those shows did not have. This show was head-to-head with the WrestleCon Super Show. To an extent, you could say the same thing about Evolve 102, which we covered earlier. But in this case, I think it affected the flow of the show to a degree as well, because you had talent that wrestled on this show, multiple talents, Joey Janela, MJF, I believe at least one or two others that were also on the WrestleCon Super Show, Tessa Blanchard, I believe, as well, who had to then rush across town to participate on Lit Up. And I'm guessing that the card order might have been a little bit different had that not been the case. And maybe things would have flowed a little bit better, because that's probably, along with the length, my other major criticism would be that I thought some of the show did not flow as well as it could have. Then again, I was watching it with bleary eyes. And that's the challenge of running a show so late, when you've got to integrate your schedule with the show that's running across town. Having said that, let's run down the card. This was 11 matches long, so it's a lengthy card to get into. The show opened up with Deonna Purrazzo versus Matt Riddle. This was a match I think a lot of people were looking forward to and had assumed would possibly be the main event. But with Riddle having maybe the single most full schedule of anybody this entire weekend, he could end up wrestling a dozen matches, depending on how the style battle event goes for the WWE brand on Saturday. With all things considered, he went on early, and he ended up having a quick sprint here with Deonna. I have to say, I thought it was a very good match. They did a good job of illustrating that Deonna is a talented grappler in her own right. Riddle having to pull her hair to escape a toe hold at one point was kind of amusing. Treated as a serious contest, Riddle won with a big knee strike. Match was relatively brief, with Riddle mostly on the defensive. The leg that Zack Sabre Jr. had worked over earlier in the Evolve Championship match was exploited a little bit by Deonna in this one. I thought it was a fun opener, almost a perfect match for the opener on a show like this. Very, very well done. A totally different match than Riddle's other two matches on the day. Riddle, as with Walter, who we discussed earlier, really now 3-for-3 on the weekend in my mind, versus three vastly different opponents in three completely different roles on the shows. And so very impressive start to the weekend for Matt Riddle. Deonna looked great as well. After the match, there was an excellent angle with James Ellsworth hitting the ring with the Intergender title and laying out Matt Riddle and cutting a promo over them and then, over him, and then being chased off to set up their match for tomorrow night. As we record this, of course, that Joey Janela Spring Break matchup will take place possibly almost exactly 24 hours from right now as I record this at 4 a.m. on technically early Friday morning / late Thursday evening, depending on how you look at it. But it was a great angle, actually. Excellent. Got over huge. Was a real holy shit moment. One thing I do want to really praise this Beyond crowd for is they really were with it for a show that started so late and a concept that was high risk. This show did not draw well at all. There's just no way to sugarcoat it. There's no reason to lie about it. It's by far the most sparsely attended of the three shows at that venue today. It had the weakest pre-sale of any show at all that's taking place at that venue. Having said that, the show was the crowd was extremely loud for almost the entire show, which again did not end until almost 3 a.m. local time. And I think it's a real credit to them that they showed up to make some noise and really appreciate the talent on the card. So I did want to give the crowd a shout out for that, and Beyond some credit for you know, really finding maybe it wasn't a large enough niche to make real money, but they certainly found an audience that was highly receptive, if nothing else. The second match, Team Pog, Jordan Grace and Lufisto versus LAX, otherwise known as EYFBO. This match was just a super fun work rate sprint. On paper, I felt like this had potential to be the best match on the show. I don't think it was the best match on the show, but it was quite good. Very, very fast paced. Jordan Grace was dishing out all of her big power spots, the spine buster, great looking pounce. They did an awesome muscle buster sit out power bomb combination that looked just absolutely great. Team Pog getting the win here. There was a little bit of an issue on the finish with a new official not holding up a count maybe as well as she should have when somebody was a little bit late on a save, but it was so minor, and they went straight to a sort of a recovery finish with Jordan Grace winning with a Michinoku driver. I thought this was a really good match. I think Team Pog, LAX is a team that gets credit from a lot of people. Team Pog, maybe not as well known, but if you've been following Beyond Wrestling, you know how good they are. Lufisto, of course, is a women's wrestling legend in my mind, and I think Jordan Grace is well on her way to that. I think, in my opinion, she was the best women's wrestler on the independent scene in the United States in 2017, and I think she's probably on pace to retain that mantle in 2018. She's a hell of a performer, and this match was really, really good, and I think the kind of match that would probably make her and Lufisto some new fans if they've never seen either one of them before. Next match was Josh Briggs versus Davian. This was, I actually enjoyed it. Another quick match, sprinty, very hard-hitting. Davian, with a sort of immediate attack, got the advantage. Briggs ended up getting the win. Very much a bomb-throwing match. I enjoyed the fact that these are two people that you really could not see anywhere other than the Beyond show. You could argue that this match could have been cut from the perspective of there were 11 matches on the show. It went a little bit too long for the time slot, but I do enjoy giving an opportunity to your local and loyal talent, taking them to this new environment in New Orleans and letting them get an opportunity to shine in front of a new audience. And I do think that it worked. I think that the people who were in the building watching and the people that were watching on Fight TV seemed to be very responsive to this matchup. So, kudos to them for putting it on. Next up was Doom Patrol versus Twisted Sisters, which is the team of Thunder Rosa and Holodead. Doom Patrol is, of course, Jocka and Chris Dickinson, sometimes referred to as Catchpoint, of course, still in Evolve. This was a good match. I thought Thunder Rosa was a real standout. She hit a lot of nice high spots, different looking stuff. A good seated senton at one point, you know, a Rey Mysterio style Dragon Rana variation, some other things. This was very much a solid matchup. You know, I think it was hurt a little bit by the fact that it was structurally maybe a little bit too similar to the Team Pog versus LAX match, which had just happened slightly before it. But that's no knock on the effort of the parties involved. Twisted Sisters got the win, which I thought was a little bit of a surprise. There were some surprise finishes on this show. I suppose, depending on how you view intergender, you know, a lot of finishes in that paradigm are kind of always going to be potential surprises. But I thought this one especially was surprising. Having said that, it didn't feel so out of left field that it didn't fit, if that makes sense. And I thought it was a good match. It just wasn't quite at the level of the Team Pog and LAX match. It was a little bit too structurally similar for me. This is definitely one that in an ideal universe, if nothing else, I would have liked to see spaced out maybe a little bit differently on the card. But, you know, that's nitpicking. And when you're working with around the limitations of having your talent potentially on the other side of town when you would ideally want to put them on, you got to do what you got to do. Next up was Jonathan Gresham versus Karen Q. To me, this was the match of the night. If somebody said this was the best match in the entire building for the entire day, I wouldn't argue with it. I'm sure some people listening to this will think that's crazy, depending on how high you are on some of the things on Bloodsport or Evolve. But this is definitely one worth going out of your way to see. I likened it on Twitter to a great first round in an old World of Sport matchup, and I really think that's probably the best way to put it. Maybe not entirely fair because it was longer than a single round would be in a World of Sport match, but just a hell of a performance by both Gresham and Karen Q. Gresham, in my mind, is potentially on his way to being the best wrestler in the world in 2018. He's had some tremendous matches in a variety of different places in a variety of different settings already this year. You know, Karen Q has quietly sort of emerged as one of the stars of women's wrestling in the Northeast Corridor. Isn't as talked about as maybe some other women's wrestlers are on the independent scene, but is every bit as good as any of the other top tier independent women's wrestlers are. She really proved it here. Heavily mat-based match, really strong psychology, a very simple finish, but a finish that made complete sense with the groundwork that they had laid up until that point. Not a lot of high spots, but to me, it was a completely good thing. they totally and completely made use of their skills, really to a maximum degree, I thought, in this match. And it was a great showcase for both of them. High marks. Gresham won, but it was in some ways I thought this match did more for Karen Q than some of the other matches did for the women who actually got the wins over the men. So kudos to both of them for succeeding in that regard. Next up, Joey Ryan and Laura James, of course their husband and wife, versus Travis Huckabee and Solo Darling, the Rumble Bees. This, to me, was kind of where the show lost some energy. I think that's sort of the consensus. I don't think I'm, you know, a wild outlier in saying that. I'm not really a Joey Ryan guy. I don't think I dislike this match as much as some people did, but it felt out of place, particularly felt out of place following the quality of a technical clinic that we had just seen with Gresham and Q. I think that was always going to be a hard match to follow. I can understand trying to go to comedy rather than trying to top something that obviously isn't going to be topped in the immediate, but this was not the comedy match to go to at this point, I didn't think. There were some interesting things and some fun little moments and even a couple of pretty nasty high impact spots in this, which you really don't think of when you think of a Joey Ryan matchup. But to me, it just seemed almost inconsistent with the rest of the show. I'm all in favor of doing a variety show, but so much of this show seemed to be about illustrating that you can have a competitive universe with men and women where they wrestle and compete as equals in a serious environment. And this match was just sort of overtly comedic, with, you know, the typical sort of emphasis on sex organs and other stuff that you'll see in a Joey Ryan match. And again, I get why people might find it funny. I get why there's an audience for it. I am not that audience. There's certain parts about the act that I think are, you know, objectively problematic, I guess would be the way I would phrase it, rather than just theoretically problematic. But I don't want to bury it too much. It was too long. If they'd done the same match in 5 minutes, I don't think it would have bothered me as much. You know, we'll get to another issue I have with it a little bit later. The Rumble Bees did win that one. Kimberly versus Tracy Williams for the Powerbomb.tv independent title was next. This was an interesting matchup, just because you had the Powerbomb.tv independent championship being defended ostensibly on a competitor's broadcast on Fight TV. So that was a little bit of an interesting dynamic, just in and of itself. This really, I don't know if this was technically Kimberly's first match back on the independents or not. I think it was. Certainly it was her first match back in Beyond Wrestling, which of course was a place that, along with Chikara, I would argue probably the two promotions where she really became a breakout independent wrestling star before signing to the WWE for a little while. This was a good match. I thought it was very competitive. There were some pretty wild spots in it. Tracy Williams hit this just absolutely brutal looking, almost delay stuff doctor bomb at one point. I thought this match utilized near falls probably better than any other match on any show in this building, actually, all day. There was a couple of near falls here that were just absolutely excellent. I believe one off of a Kimberly Swanton and another off of, if I'm not mistaken, a Hot Shots Lariat, which was absolutely brutal looking. I mean, it looked like he absolutely cleaned her clock with it. That was a good match. Tracy Williams retaining the Powerbomb.tv independent title with a crossface variation. This wasn't blow away. There were even a few moments in it that I didn't think entirely clicked. But by and large, this was a good effort, and I thought a good introduction of Kimberly back into the independent wrestling scene. I would consider this certainly one of the more successful matches on the show, and a match that felt competitive and entertaining in a very even-handed way. It didn't feel forced. It didn't feel like either party was having to go out of their way to compensate for the other. It didn't feel like the presentation was done in a way that wasn't believable. It just felt like two athletes that were about at the same level trying to beat each other and win a title. And that is sometimes a challenge with intergender for a variety of reasons, but it wasn't a challenge in this match. I thought it completely worked. Next up was a four-way, Mia Yim, who I also don't think has been back very long. If this could have even been her first match back from a leg injury, I'm not sure, versus Tessa Blanchard, versus MJF, versus Wheeler Yuta. This was, I actually thought, in some ways, the most entertaining match on the show, just because of the different dynamics at play with the personalities involved. MJF and Stokely Hathaway, to my mind, are maybe the most well-rounded overall act in all of independent wrestling at this time. Stokely was out there with them. You got the pre-match promo from MJF doing the rundown banter that he always does. Stokely mocking Mia Yim for the injured leg. It was just really, really fun stuff, really fun banter. You know, I thought all four of them looked good. Tessa Blanchard is somebody that has improved an ungodly amount in the last 18 months or so. It's almost a completely different wrestler at this point. I don't know if it's confidence that's just picked up or what, but she's just not the same person anymore. MJF continues to impress as a heel. He continues to impress as somebody that understands that at the independent wrestling level, you can do the moves, you can have the offense, you can have the flash, you can have the sizzle, but ultimately getting heat is still what it's about. That's extremely refreshing to see. Wheeler Yuta, to my mind, such a unique wrestler. He did a lot of unique sort of off-the-rope, arm-draggy, quasi-lucha stuff even in this matchup. He's a guy to look out for. I really think he has the potential to be one of the breakout stars in independent wrestling in 2018. His talent level's there. He's got a sort of undercover, I guess, charisma, which I know sort of sounds like that can't be a real thing, but there's something there with him, and I don't think he even fully knows what it is yet. I'm not sure any promotion he works for has fully captured it yet, but there is something there with that guy, and I do think he has potential to be a star. Mia Yim looked great in this match as well, especially for being back from just being back from the injury. Tessa picked up the win here with a kind of a creative finish. She did the big face code breaker off the top rope, and then the two males cracked heads, and she got the pinfall, which I thought was actually really well done. Sometimes that stuff can look kind of comedic, and I did, in a bad way, and I didn't think it looked comedic here, so I really enjoyed that. Next up, Jimmy Havoc versus Jessica Havoc. I'll be honest, this match was kind of a hard pass for me. I mean, I watched it and I thought it was fine. It certainly was not a bad match by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, I like the idea of Jimmy Havoc more than I actually like Jimmy Havoc, and I don't even really like the idea of Jessica Havoc, even though I'm probably not as down on her as an in-ring performer as some people are. The match was fine. Jessica Havoc won. I get why you would book it, especially if you're doing an all-intergender show as your sort of theme and your big thing for WrestleMania weekend. Having said that, this is a match that I feel definitely could have been cut when you've got 11 matches on the show. I don't know that you need to do this. I get that you're trying to look for things to sell tickets, but I don't know. I get the gimmick. But it wasn't by no means was it a bad match, but it didn't land with me. Next up, semi-main event slot, you got Joey Janela and Penelope Ford, the team of Janelope, a team that I think has actually had a pretty good run on the indie scene this year, several really good matches, taking on the sort of thrown together team of Orange Cassidy and Session Moth Martina. This is an interesting one. I mean, I think, if I'm not mistaken, originally it was either discussed or the outright plan was for this to be, you know, versus Darby and Allen and Priscilla Kelly, and that fell through because Priscilla's in Japan, if I'm not mistaken. Could be wrong about that. In any case, this is the match we got. I actually thought, for when they went on, which was awfully late in the show, in the semi-main event slot, with Janela having already wrestled across town earlier in the night against Pentagon at the WrestleCon Super Show, I thought this was a pretty darn entertaining comedy match. You know, I'm more of a guy who likes comedy in his wrestling rather than comedy wrestling. So this was by no means my style of match. It's not something I will ever watch again, but if you're going to do this sort of thing, do it well. And I felt that they did do it well. I thought they executed a compelling matchup. You know, Orange Cassidy, for those who haven't seen him, is basically a professional loafer, for lack of a better way of putting it. Session Moth Martina is a professional drunk. So you've basically got a drunk and like a lazy layabout versus Janela and Penelope Ford. And kind of everything that you would expect from that happened. You had Janela at one point audibly screaming and trolling Loki from the top rope, who of course wasn't there. You had Orange Cassidy execute the slowest, sloppiest quasi-Canadian destroyer in history, right before the finish, which was an interesting and actually amusing troll of the Louisiana State Athletic Commission, who of course is somewhat infamously at this point banned the pile driver, which has been one of the big controversies on social media throughout the lead up to WrestleMania weekend and how that would affect the indie shows. So there's the first test of that. The GIF is available on Twitter if you want to see it and laugh at the absurdity of it. Penelope did get the win with Penelope Ford crossbody on Orange Cassidy. My big thing here is, if you're gonna, I don't think you need two comedy tag team matches on this show. I just don't think you need it. I, you know, again, I know you're trying to give people slots on the show who have been a loyal part of your product. I know you're trying to get names on the show that will help sell tickets. I respect that. This is all Monday morning quarterbacking to one degree or another. As somebody who promotes and is involved in various wrestling events, I understand how sometimes you think something's going to land and it doesn't. And it sucks, and it sucks to hear people take shots at you, and this is by no means a shot at Drew Cordero or anybody at Beyond Wrestling, but I would have been perfectly happy, and I think the show would have been a lot better if this was the comedy tag and the Joey Ryan tag just was not on the show. You would have cut 10 to 15 minutes, and you still gotten the laugh, and still gotten the entertainment that you were going for with the sort of laid-back comedic matchup. Moving on to the main event, Timothy Thatcher versus Tony Storm. Wild matchup on paper, wild matchup in reality. I think, again, this was probably one of the most anticipated matchups on this show. I think this was the matchup on the show that when Beyond started doing the slow announcements in terms of the matchups that they had scheduled for Lit Up, I think this was the match that caught a lot of people's eyes and maybe made them think, okay, an all-intergender show, maybe it's not my thing. Man, this is such a wild idea, this matchup, that I've got to see it no matter how I feel about the concept itself. And I have to say, this was a good match. It went on late. Tony Storm, you know, she may have just been trying to out-tough guy Timothy Thatcher, but she did not look pleased to be wrestling that that late when she came down the entranceway. The match, though, I thought was really good. Sort of basic grappling stuff for the most part. They came up for some big strikes. Thatcher sort of stonewalled her, was inviting her to hit harder, sort of almost taunting and making a mockery out of her efforts, but in a way that wasn't so over the top that it was just kind of ridiculous. It was very Thatchery and very much in keeping with the story and character of who Timothy Thatcher has been for the last few years. I was expecting Thatcher to win this. It didn't, I don't know why, but it really didn't even occur to me that Tony Storm would have a chance to win this matchup. And lo and behold, Tony Storm won this matchup clean as a sheet with an armbar submission. Yeah, Thatcher got busted open in this, and that, you know, there it was shocking to me. There were some crazy cutoffs in this. There was a spot with Tony Storm doing Thatcher's headbutt to him. It was a good match. It would not... I think for some people, this might have been the match of the show. For me, it was Jonathan Gresham versus Karen Q, but I would have no real quarrel with anybody who had this match as their top match of the night. Overall, I would say that Lit Up was a good show. Probably too long. You know, it's a little bit difficult to say because I think the time slot may color your thinking a little bit about that. It's hard to be fully objective about it because of that. Having said that, in part, the time slot should have dictated a tighter and I think less lengthy show. Certainly there were too many matches. I hate to pick on any particular match or any particular talent, but there were two, maybe three matches that I feel you could have easily cut from the show without diluting the quality or really or even really eliminating any element of the show that was necessary to sort of present that variety package that you want. Having said that, I'm not an intergender guy. I came into this card with very low expectations. I was not even entirely sure I would watch this card. I decided to watch it live sort of as a last minute thing because I had the entire Fight TV package anyway and figured, hey, why not? And you know what? It very much over-delivered. It's entirely possible that if I hadn't watched this card live and had watched it at a different time, that I would think even more highly of it because I wouldn't be, you know, bleary-eyed and tired from a long day of watching a bunch of other stuff. Having said that, I think even with the sort of handicaps that this show had, it was a success. There were some standouts. There were some really good matches. And the Ellsworth angle with Riddle was also really good. So I would actually recommend people check this out, or at the very least, cherry-pick through some of the stronger matches on the show, because there are some matches on this show that, you know, could end up in the top, you know, 20 matches of the weekend, depending on how the rest of the shows shake down. I mean, nothing that guaranteed, nothing at the match of the year level, but I would certainly say that stuff like Gresham versus Karen Q, Thatcher versus Tony Storm, to a lesser extent, maybe Kimberly versus Tracy Williams and Team Pog versus LAX were all really strong matches in their own right, and there were several other good matches sort of littered throughout the rest of the card as well. Having said that, this is number 3 in the Pod Blast for WrestleMania weekend independent wrestling shows. I've made no promises about doing any of them. I make no promises going forward. I may cover the Evolve events on Friday. I may cover Spring Break. I may not. We'll see. I've had fun doing these. I hope you've been having fun listening to them. And one way or the other, I'm sure you guys will hear from me soon.